and Unifest, two iconic events that shaped our history and continue to inspire our future. Events include prayer calls, a torch run, a lantern peace walk, a recommitment service, and a mini Unifest at Union Temple Baptist Church. This is an opportunity to honor the past and build bridges for a united future for our children and families, reviving the values of the Million Man March and Unifest. Details at UnionTempleDC.com.
At 89.3 FM, this is member supported WPFW, Washington.
DC, and we have an exciting show in store for you today. So keep your ears open. Of course, this is the first Monday of the pledge drive. We have a goal of $700 for this hour. We'll be giving out the number and more details a little bit later in the show. But we know you're going to support this show as you always do. We have two very exciting segments. I'm extremely excited of our first guest, Dr. Gerald Horn, who, of course, is no stranger to many of you. He is the African-American historian who holds the Moores Chair of History and African-American Studies at the University of Houston. And many of you know he has published more than 45 books. He is heard on WPFW with Esther on the ground Fridays at 10 a.m. and also across many, many other platforms across the United States. So we are thrilled to have him on with us for about 20 minutes or so as he's coming to D.C. this Friday to talk about his latest book, Washington, D.C., the Capital of Slavery, 1800 to 1865. And he will be launching this book in the DMV. Good morning, Dr. Horn.
Thank you for inviting me.
I am very thrilled and honored to have you on, especially talking about this book, which is very riveting, including for those of us who live in D.C., and the book talks about a lot of the history. Talk about, share with the listeners a little bit about the fact that the D.C. area, including Baltimore, was the major center of the abolition movement. And you're also going to talk about why it can become the capital of the anti-fascist movement. But let's start with the 1800s and explain to us a little bit about why and how the D.C. area, including Baltimore, was the capital of the abolition movement.
Well, first of all, it's no accident that many stalwarts of the anti-slavery abolitionist movement had roots in Maryland, be it Frederick Douglass, be it Harriet Tubman, for example. Likewise, it's hardly accidental that many of the stalwarts also either had their roots in Virginia and or executed their most famed actions in the Cavalier State. I'm speaking of Nat Turner, for example. I'm speaking of Martin Delaney, who was born in what is now West Virginia, at that time West Virginia. I'm thinking of the raid on Harper's Ferry in what is now West Virginia, led by John Brown and a multi racial band.
And that raid was actually, I believe, October 16th. So we're right on target for the discussing that.
Absolutely. And likewise, despite the fact that on Capitol Hill, you had many legislators prattling and prating about liberty and freedom, within a stone's throw of Capitol Hill, you had Africans being sold. Alexandria, Virginia, for example, what is now Alexandria, Virginia, was a major headquarters for the African slave trade. The key slave traders, speaking of the firm of Franklin and Armfield, had one of their major headquarters across the river in Alexandria. Some of your listeners may be familiar with Solomon Northrop. He's the free black man from north of the Mason-Dixon line who was inveigled to come to Washington, where he was kidnapped and then sold down the river. That was turned into the award-winning movie, 12 Years a Slave, you may recall. And this also was hardly accidental, insofar as kidnapping was a frequent fate and destiny for free Negroes, which particularly afflicted Baltimore. Baltimore had the most sizable population of free Negroes in the United States of America, and not least because that also meant they were subject to being kidnapped and sold into slavery. This is one of the reasons why Baltimore and the Washington-Baltimore corridor became the capital of anti-slavery. And I dare say, going forward in the 21st century, the same factors that led it to becoming the capital of slavery will lead it to becoming the capital of anti-fascism.
Wow. Well, that's some good news. That's very exciting to hear. And we're excited. So tell us, Dr. Horn, of course, as we know, today is Indigenous Peoples Day, and I wonder if you have any connections. And I think you mentioned Tecumseh. Is that his name? The Native American who played a role, but anything you might want to say linking the issue of Native Americans with what you discuss in your book?
Well, Tecumseh, as you correctly point out, was a celebrated Indigenous warrior. He was prominent during the War of 1812, when the United States almost lost its sovereignty. During the War of 1812, you not only had Tecumseh fighting shoulder to shoulder with the British invaders, that's how he lost his life, but also in August 1814, during the height of that conflict, you had enslaved Africans in the District of Columbia who joined the British in helping to torch the White House, sending President Madison and his spouse Dolly fleeing into the streets one step ahead of the posse, and then these enslaved Africans fleeing on British boats to freedom in Trinidad and Tobago, where their descendants continue to reside. Likewise, it's difficult to discuss the trajectory of militant anti-slavery in particular without discussing the linkages between the indigenous population and the African population. I'm thinking of the people we refer to as the Seminoles in Florida, who were involved in some of the bloodiest conflicts that Washington was embroiled in before the Civil War, wars circa 1820, 1830s, and 1850s. In many ways, this was not only a joint indigenous African force combating the U.S. military, in many ways, it was an African-led force combating the U.S. military, which from the point of view of the rulers of this country was jeopardizing their major investment, speaking of the investment in the bodies of enslaved Africans. I'm on tap to produce a new book rather shortly dealing with the indigenous struggle in what is now the Pacific Northwest. And it's interesting to note that Oregon and Portland, much in the news now, has one of the smallest black populations of any of the major U.S. cities, not least because in the 19th century, the state of Oregon sought to ban the influx of black people because they thought that they would join with the indigenous, particularly the Cayuse, in uprooting the settlers, for example. Mm. So this is a story that's receiving much more attention nowadays, I'm happy to say.
Mm. And I'm happy to say we're going to repeat this again, but Dr. Horn is coming to D.C. this Friday at the Dr. Horn can help me out. It's going to be at the University of Maryland. I think the doors open at 6:30.
Montgomery College, Silver Spring, downtown.
Yes, and I do know that. Montgomery College, Silver Spring, downtown, and the doors open at 6:30, and we will repeat this again before you leave us. And so it's very exciting that Dr. Horn is coming to this area as one of the places where he's launching this very, very important book at a very important week in history. So there's so much that you discuss in this book. We're not going to be able to get to all of it, which is why many listeners will want to come check you out on Friday. I've heard you discuss the book several times already, and one of the interesting things you talked about is that the state of Maryland actually devised its own foreign policy during this period. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, Annapolis found itself in a quandary. It was the host, if you like, of a significant population of free Negroes. During the War of 1812, as noted, you had an uprising by the enslaved population. Annapolis felt that the free black population set a bad example by its very existence for the enslaved population. So the idea occurred to deport, to remove the free black population, which led Maryland being in the forefront of establishing the West African state of Liberia. Not only that, but Annapolis established its own settlement in West Africa that was subsequently folded into Liberia. I'm speaking of Cape Palmas, and then appropriated funds to deport this free black population. What happens, of course, is that once Liberia is established, and for example, there's a Liberian Declaration of Independence a few years after the founding in the early 1820s, the Declaration of Independence is quite militant. And I think future research will reveal that the African population deported from Maryland in particular was in the forefront of not leaving behind or not forgetting the enslaved population that they left behind when they were forced to remove themselves from North America. And this is a story well worth excavation.
Absolutely. And you also discussed that there are quite a number of African people who fled to, for example, Trinidad.
Yes, black people were fleeing hither and yon. I mean, of course, Canada was a major port of call. In my book on Texas, I point out that during the antebellum period, the pre-1861 period, there were about 3,000 to 5,000 enslaved Africans from the Lone Star State who fled into Mexico. Mexico, as you know, had a president of African descent, Vicente Guerrero, years before the election of Barack Obama in 2008-2009. And he moved to abolish enslavement, which infuriated the settlers led by Stephen F. Austin and Sam Houston, men who not only gave their names ostentatiously to two major cities in the Lone Star State, but also led a revolt against Mexico declaring independence in 1836. And of course, as an independent nation, Texas became a champion of the African slave trade. The Lone Star flag could be found off the coast of Cuba, off the coast of Brazil, off the coast of Angola. However, and this is a major part of the story, the enslavers in Texas found it difficult to stand up to the Haitian revolutionaries. The Haitian Revolution, 1791 to 1804, ignited a general crisis of the entire slave system, which could only be resolved with its collapse. It forced Britain to decide that the better part of wisdom was to end the African slave trade to their cash cow known as Jamaica by 1807. The United States follows suit, at least officially, in 1808. Britain then abolishes slavery in the 1830s under prodding by Haiti. And then British abolitionists and Haitian revolutionaries gang up on Texas, forcing Texas to crawl into the Union of the United States of America in 1845. And then, of course, spearheading a war against Mexico by 1846, which leads to the United States seizing California, now the richest and most populous state in the Union, reputedly the fourth or fifth largest economy on planet Earth. It's quite a diabolical story that unfolds in these pages, I must say.
Yes, I'm sure it is. But on the other hand, there's a lot that we in the D.C. area and the DMV can be proud of. Perhaps you could talk a little bit about that, that we weren't just the capital of slavery from 1800 to 1865, but as you kind of said, we were the capital of the abolition movement, and now you're saying we could possibly become the capital of the anti-fascist movement. So share a little bit about that, because that's something we can be proud of and look forward to.
Well, absolutely. For example, there was apprehension during the antebellum era, the pre-Civil War era, about the number of Black postal workers in the District of Columbia, because it thought that there would be a transmission belt for the circulation of abolitionist and anti-slavery material, which happened to be the case. And likewise, going forward in the 21st century, we fully and understandably expect not only postal workers, but unionized workers in general to be part of the anti-fascist movement. Certainly the workers in the district who are now under the gun, being deprived of paychecks for a current period, perhaps for an indefinite period, that inevitably will light a fire under them, forcing them into the anti-Trump movement, which we expect to reach a new crescendo on Saturday, October 18th, with the No Kings movement, for example. Mm-hmm. Likewise, many visitors to Washington were struck by how dependent the founding fathers and their descendants were dependent upon Black labor, for example. And this turned out to be a serious threat to the security of the slavery system. President Andrew Jackson, a hero of Mr. Trump, the president approximately 200 years ago, it turns out that he was heavily dependent upon a so-called Black servant who was literate, who was thought to be circulating state secrets hither and yon. I should also say that there were many Black people who were seeking to escape Washington by any means necessary, up to and including on vessels, for example, from the district. Some were captured, some were not. And we expect that kind of heroism to be replicated and duplicated in 2025 going forward.
Well, that is certainly very exciting to hear, encouraging for all of us who are out in the streets and trying to take a stand. And I want to announce that PFW will be broadcasting the No Kings Day from 12 noon to 2 p.m. on Saturday. So stay tuned for that. We have just about 3 minutes left or so, Dr. Horn. How would you, and again, let's announce again when you are coming to D.C. this Friday. And I find it very interesting that it is the day after, well, as we're going to hear in the next segment about the Million Man March, which was also October 16th, but that was the day as well. And you probably know the year that John Brown raided Harper's Ferry, and you're coming October 17th. So tell us again where you will be, and encourage people to come out and check you out.
Well, first of all, the details can be found at Eventbrite, B-R-I-T-E. It can be found on my Facebook page under my name. And once again, Montgomery College, Silver Spring downtown, October 17th, Friday, doors open at 6:30 p.m. Be there or be square.
Absolutely. And again, people can find that on Eventbrite. And I believe it's probably on your Facebook page as well. Any final thoughts as we're wrapping up? There's so much in this book that listeners would be interested in. The role of Baltimore, talk a little bit about the unique role of Baltimore during this period.
Well, as noted, Baltimore had the most significant free black population, which automatically thrust it into the forefront of the anti-slavery movement. With regard to the District of Columbia, its uniqueness in the antebellum period continues to this very day. That is to say, it's a relatively small city festooned with diplomatic legations. Historically, a major ally of the progressive movement, of the anti-slavery movement, and I dare say the anti-fascist movement, has been and will continue to be our friends in the international community. Mm-hmm. It's rather important for our friends in D.C. to be our linkage to the legations of Cuba, of Venezuela, because, for example, if Mr. Trump carries forward on his despicable plan to invade Venezuela, that tax revenue will not be around to go towards healthcare, education, and daycare. It will be going to kill Venezuelans, for example. Mm-hmm. So we have an understandable and objective reality that we must be part of an international struggle against fascism, an international struggle against Trumpism. And certainly the District of Columbia is well positioned to lead that struggle, because in the district, you have the closest ties to our friends in the international community.
Absolutely. I'm very proud and honored that Dr. Gerald Horn could be a guest with us this morning in preparation for his visit to us this coming Friday at 6:30. And again, he is launching his latest book, Washington, D.C., The Capital of Slavery, 1800 to 1865, and as he just shared, that has many implications for today, 2025. And I'm also proud that Dr. Horn is very much a part of not only the PFW family, but the Pacifica family. And I know he would want you to make a pledge for this show and for this station. We're going to spend a few moments encouraging you to make that pledge. We have a goal of $700. Frank Smith, who many of you might know, who you can hear him with Dr. Watkins on Mondays at 2 p.m. is going to help me out. But Gerald, you can hang in here with us for a few more minutes, or you can take a bow, and we hope to see you on Friday. And I know Dr. Horn is very much aware of the importance of Pacifica and the importance of WPFW in this moment that we're in now. Frank, maybe you could give the phone number for people to make a pledge.
Sure. 1-800-222-9739, or you can call 202-588-9739. As you know, Dr. Horn is a jewel to this community. And especially in 2025, the necessity of independent media has never been greater. Mm-hmm. We live in a time when corporate consolidation narrows the spectrum of voices, when misinformation spreads faster than truth, and when, too, many outlets prioritize profit over people. Dr. Horn, thank you so much for what you do.
Thank you for inviting me, and I'm afraid I have to sign off.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you. Unfortunately, I have a bad cold.
Yeah.
Maybe you can give Frank the other ways people can make a pledge in addition to the phone number.
No problem.
You can do Cash App and
no
everything
problem.
Else.
They can also go to WPFWFM.org and click the Donate Now button. You can hit Cash App, WPFWFM, or $WPFWFM. You can also text 801-801. That's 801-801. You can also donate a used car, truck, motorcycle, boat, or recreational vehicle to WPFW and receive an income tax donation.
And that does that go towards the shows?
Yeah.
That donation? That would be great.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Okay.
1-800-1866-WPFW. That's 939-973-9227. 1-866-973-9227.
That's to donate a car. Mm-hmm. And once again, give the main number, 1-800.
Yep, 1-800-222-9739 or 202-588-9739.
Okay, and do we have any pledges yet? Usually we do by this time.
Not yet.
Folks, we need you to pledge. As you know, this is a challenging time in our history, and we need you to support this show and this radio station. We'll be back again to try to convince you to make a pledge. But now we are going to shift to another very exciting and important discussion about the Million Man March, which was 30 years ago.
Yes, on
Thursday is the anniversary. We're going to be speaking to Reverend Willie Wilson and I believe Calvin Hawkins, but we're going to welcome them with a little bit of music. Hopefully. Okay, and that we say amen, amen to the Million Man March, which was 30 years ago this week. Quite something. Mm. And we're honored to have Reverend Wilson on with us. We're going to perhaps start with some of the many things that are happening this entire week, and then we'll move into a discussion of the importance of the Million Man March 30 years ago and some reflections. Reverend Wilson, let's start with, there's a lot happening, including today. Maybe you could give listeners a kind of a rundown of all the important and exciting things taking place this week. Hey,
it's so good to be here. And let me say, you say you need to raise $700 on this show period.
Yes.
So I'm going to do 1/7 of that. So I'm going to do $100 on WPFW-FM WPFW-FM as soon as I get off.
Thank you, Reverend Wilson.
Right. Let me just say that we started this morning at 7:30 a.m. I was so excited. We had, I would guess, at least 100 runners who are going to participate in the torch run all throughout the city. We started at Union Temple, from there to Mosque Number 4 of the Nation of Islam, from there to Barry Farms, from there to the Anacostia Neighborhood Museum, from there to the Frederick Douglass Home, and then they will end up at Union Temple. We started this morning. We were so pleased to have the one of the chief principal of the Apache Native Americans of the Piscataway Nation.
Wow.
Morning, and he led us in a special ceremony. We had a libation led by Sister Mama Ayo Handy, and then We took a picture in front of the mural there at the church, and then they took off. I'm getting a running report. I think they are now at Barry Farms.
Wow.
Bringing some light to our city and our community with the torch run at a time when people are losing their jobs. President of the United States lauds and applauds and gloats over having killed 67,000 men, women, and children in Palestine.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to bring some light in our community. And that's why we have joined together UniFest and the Million Man March, because both of those iconic legacies spoke to community and unity and culture and bringing our community together. So we thought to put the two together. So that kicks it off. On Thursday, we're doing a walk across the historic 11th Street Bridge, where slaves walked to freedom. At the end of that walk, we have a program at Union Temple. The current executive CEO and president of the National Council of Negro Women, which, of course, was headed by Dr. Dorothy Height, who advised me in organizing the Million Man March, because she participated in every march from the sleeping car porters all the way up to the Million Man March. And so that takes place. And then, of course, on the 18th is the big day, where we have organizations of national repute and also local. We have religious community, the Nation of Islam, Morris Science, Christian churches, all of them together. And we have a little bit of our culture. We'll have go-go music, gospel music, representation from every segment of our community, because if there was ever a time we needed to come together in unity, it is now. And that's what we will be doing. Every speaker will speak to a commitment. We've got the Divine Nine, fraternities, sororities. We've got everybody on this program that starts at 9 a.m. On Saturday morning. And it's going to be an exciting day. But the beginning, we're going to set up. We're working with our scholars and educators. We're putting together a Zoom history program so that we will not depend on a government that has never taught our true history. We're going to, through our churches, our fraternities, sororities, organizations, teach our own history on Zoom. We're going to have parenting classes after the devastation of, we are now experiencing the repercussions of 50 years after crack cocaine and mass incarceration, which really destroyed our communities and our families, and we must rebuild. And that's part of what this is all about, all the activities that are going on this week.
Very exciting indeed. And if people want to check out everything that's happening day to day, what's the easiest, or what are some of the ways they can do that?
The best way is just to go to UnionTempleDC.com. And we have all the details for the whole week and how they can plug in. Right now, I passed by one of the stations where they are doing their torch run. And they had a host of people at that first station with water and refreshments for the people. It's just a great day. I was just encouraged and inspired to see all these different groups coming together in the name of unity and commitment to the struggle for the liberation and freedom and equality for our people. That was the call in 1995.
Absolutely.
The same call, bringing us together and collective responsibility to ourselves and to each other. And that's what it's all about all week long. And people can get information at UnionTempleDC.com. They can go on there, and every activity is recorded there. And we're looking for them to be with us, to join us at the church on Thursday at 7 p.m. after the walk across the bridge. We have the current president and CEO of the National Council of Negro Women, who will be joining us on that program. We're going to have a round table of persons who were involved in 1995, because we've got two generations who know nothing about what That's the Million Man March was. We've been showing the movie Get on the Bus that Spike Lee did in the schools and the libraries to educate this generation. And then on that night, on Thursday night at Union Temple, myself as well as others will talk about some of the behind the scenes things that occurred that made this great day take place. And so it's going to be great. And then Saturday all day is going to be great. We're excited about it.
Yes, and I'm excited as well. Again, we're talking to Reverend Willie Wilson with Union Temple Baptist Church. And of course, some of us do remember 30 years ago. And let's jump back. And I have my friend Chuck Hicks is on the phone. He may want to jump in as we talk about reflections from that back then. So many reflections, we're not going to be able to get to all of them, but I must say, and Reverend Wilson certainly can articulate this as well, how amazingly exciting it was. And of course, it was something that the mainstream media did not pay any attention to. They didn't think it was going to make any difference. And I know that Black radio, and of course our radio station as well, made a big difference. But it was, I mean, some of you who were around certainly remember the energy that day was just incredible. So many people, a million people out there. So, Reverend Wilson, I know there's too much to even share, but tell us a little bit about the importance of that day and some of the things that happened, and it was truly unforgettable.
Well, we got to talk about the fact of how many lives were affected and changed. For example, the brother who started We Act Radio right here in Washington, D.C.
Kimon.
Uh-huh. Yeah, he was saying the other day how when the minister made the call and said, go back home and do something, he said, I was one of those people that was carjacking and robbing people. And he said that was the encouragement that I needed to come back and start We Act Radio. That's why it exists today. We had over 2 million Black men to register to vote. We had businesses to start. And of course, we know every time we make that effort to come out from under the oppression that we experience and continue to experience, opposition always finds a way to try to stifle our efforts. I remember, for example, we did not have, just one little story, we did not have social media in 1995, mm-hmm. and we were in Chicago. We had all these religious denominations of the Black community there. We had the National Baptist, National Baptist USA, Progressive National Baptist, AME, AME Zion, Pentecostal Assemblies of the World. Everybody was there. Reverend Joseph Lowry got up and he said, don't anybody go out of here and say these organizations are on board, because they have to go back to their parent body, to the executive board, and sign off on this. Didn't have social media. We fly back into Washington. One of the individuals who got on the move, with this Million Man March very late because he was opposed, because he wasn't the head honcho, he runs to the mic and says, all these organizations are on board. News reporters are writing it down. They run to their phones and they call these presidents, and they had denied that they were on board because they had not received the approval from their executive board. That almost destroyed the effort before it got started. But God blessed us. And in spite of that, we were able to overcome it, come together in unity. And you know, the rest is history. Almost 2 million Black men who gathered out there on that beautiful day without one incident, no negativity, nothing but peace, harmony. And people ask me, should we have another Million Man March? I say, no, we just need the spirit of the Million Man March.
Absolutely. And we're going to welcome Calvin Hawkins in a moment. I just want to say I'm getting a lot of texts, and one is from our own Reggie Robinson, who's a very much a part of Union Temple and a cardiologist, and he texted me and said, Greater Washington 100 Black Men of D.C. chapter was started after being inspired by the Million Man March, and now we serve over 80 to 100 young Black men, middle and high school in the DMV, boys, yes, on Saturday. So that's just one example of the results of this Million Man March. let's welcome, and we just have a 1 minute before we need to take another pitch break, but welcome Calvin Hawkins. Introduce yourself, and we're going to give you a little more time after this pitch break, but tell us who you are, and one thing that was so important to you, the impact the Million Man March had on you personally.
Good morning, Joni. This is Calvin Hawkins from Prince George's County. I'm a council member at large in Prince George's County, and I am honored to be with Reverend Wilson. One of the significant reflections I have, how I felt good to be a black man around so many black men and like so many black men that were there that day, listening to the speakers, especially Minister Louis Farrakhan. I left the Million Man March committed to making a positive difference, more than I was already doing in the community that I lived in, which was at the time Ward 7 in Washington, D.C.
And we're very happy and honored that you could join us this morning. We're going to take a little break to encourage people to make a pledge. Frank, you can give out the number. Just give out the 1-800 number and then tell people how they can also make a pledge on Cash App and all those other ways.
Well, we've got an anonymous to thank from Petersburg, Virginia. He made a hefty pledge drive, a pledge. So dial 1-800-222-9739, or you can pledge anytime, anywhere on WPFWFM.org. Be sure to take this show, to select this show at To Heal DC as when you do that. You can Cash App $WPFWFM or WPFWFM, or you can text 801-801.
And how much more do we need to go? And I'm gonna, because he's my friend, I'm gonna challenge Reggie Robinson out there to make a pledge.
The goal is 800, and we have 700 to go.
Okay, and then Reverend Wilson made a pledge on the air, so for $100, so we have 600 to go. I would think, yeah, 600 to go, folks. And I'm just going to say this, and then we're going to bring Calvin back on. I can remember Reverend Wilson being on the air 30 years ago. I was on the air Monday. It was a pledge drive. It was right after the Million Man March. Yeah. That show, I think I brought in one of the largest amounts of money of support for the station ever. It was $4,000 people were pledged. The phones were ringing off the hook. Yeah. Right after that Monday, because people were so excited. So this is important exciting that we're bringing back this excitement of what happened 30 years ago. And Calvin, jump in with anything else you would like to say, and perhaps how this is affecting Prince George's County, or how it's affected you in these past 30 years?
I'm glad you asked that question. I was so excited again to be a part of it. And then to hear Reverend Wilson say, no, we don't need another Million Man March. We just have to engage in the spirit of the Million Man March. And I thought about that. The individuals who are no longer with us that were there that day, all the individuals who made that day possible, we can't experience that again, but we can always experience the spirit of that moment. And I think that's so important. For me, the Million Man March helped me get focused and disciplined on becoming a better public servant. And as a result, it has led me to become an elected official in Prince George's County for the last 6 years. But I live each and every day with the spirit of the Million Man March, because so much change and honestly, for me, so a street guy, Washington, D.C. guy, it took a Minister Louis Farrakhan to reach my attention, like so many other brothers, and say, hey, the minister is speaking. He had the stature, he had the respect, and as a result, I tried to do more and more stuff to make our communities better, opposed to doing negative things to tear down our community. So I'm just grateful to be a part of it. I'm grateful to have this chance to work with Reverend Willie Wilson and so many other leaders who are so significant to the movement of not just America, but Black people in general.
Absolutely. And Reverend Wilson, you were reminding us, or me, of the women who were involved back in 30 years ago. And of course, there are women involved this year. But share with us, remind some of us, or tell some of us who may not know, some of the well-known women who were involved 30 yes. years ago.
Quite some of the most powerful Black women in the history of our race were involved. Dr. Dorothy Height, National Council of Negro Women, whom I mentioned earlier. Betty Sabazz, the wife of Malcolm X. Rosa Parks, Maya Angelou, Queen Mother Moore. Oh, it was just a great assemblage of all those women. And in fact, we're doing a tribute to those women on this coming Saturday at the big gathering. Cora Masters Barry will be doing that. We're going to do a tribute to the Honorable Marion Barry, because without him, we would not have been able to do this. He rolled out the red carpet and yes, brought all the D.C. government agencies on board. And as you said earlier, some of them did not think, the government, for example, didn't think this was going to happen. Then about 2 days before, Alexis Herrmann called us and said, is this really going to happen? The White House doesn't believe it's going to happen. At that point, we were able to report that we had, at that point, 553 buses coming into the city. And at that time, that's when the federal government shut down and went out of town, because they knew Black men were coming in record numbers into this District of Columbia. And we need that spirit more than ever with what's going on, people losing their jobs and some feeling down and hopeless. And that's why the response to this has been so overwhelming. People, I mean, if you could have been at the church this morning, I know it was over 100 who came out to participate in that torch run this morning. And I know the whole week is going to be exciting. All roads lead to Southeast. I decided we were not going to go down to the mall, but right in the heart of our community, the police department is quartering it off a 4-block radius around Union Temple. And that's where it all takes place on Saturday. Stage will be erected early Saturday morning, and all roads lead to Southeast for this great day. I'm saying to everybody, don't miss it. We're going to light up the city on Saturday. I know there's another demonstration going on across town, but the big one for our community is right in Anacostia, right by Union Temple there. And we're going to have a great time coming together in unity and in resurrecting our community and the spirit of the Million Man March.
Absolutely. And I don't know, my friend Chuck, I know you were very involved back then. You have something you want to jump in and share? Any recollections? If you're still on there. It really, you know, those of us who do remember it, and I'm glad that Reverend Wilson mentioned Marion Barry. I can't think about the Million Man March without thinking about Marion Barry. It's really an inspiration. And again, this was not supported by the mainstream media. They all thought it was not going to be nothing happening, you know, it was no big deal. But they were surprised, and it was the organizing of the Black community through the radio and through many different ways that brought people out. Yes, Chuck.
Chuck, one of the things that I'd like to just throw out is I got lucky enough to speak at the Million Man March through Dr. Chavis. One of the things that we did, we being the unions, that we coordinated all the black unions or people in unions who wanted to, Council 20 who wanted to come to the march, because none of the major unions endorsed the march.
Mm.
None of the major unions. But we sent out info that anybody coming to, any union members coming collectively to the march on Washington, Council 20 was their headquarters. And we had hundreds and hundreds of people. One of the interesting things was that a lot of the jobbers at Giant didn't say anything to anybody. And the day of the march, they all called in and came to the march.
Mm. And of course, Chuck, you were the president of Ask Me Local 20 at that point, correct?
Yes.
And that is the largest union representing the most workers in the DMV, I believe. Very important union. Yeah. That was a union Dr. King was marching with and was killed down there in Memphis.
We had people from all over the country who were in unions come, and it came through Council 20, because none of the major unions had endorsed the march, but we had our headquarters was open and we organized people and they came in buses, and it was a wonderful experience to open the doors of the Union Council 20 to all our brothers who came from across the country.
Yes, and absolutely. And of course, Ben Chavis played an important role, and he's still playing an important role out there as the head of the Black Newspaper Association. That's not the correct name, but that's what he does. Reverend Wilson, we have a few minutes left. Anything you'd like to jump in? And of course, we'll ask Calvin as well. Chuck mentioned the unions. I don't know if unions will be involved. I'm sure there'll be
someone to thank Candace Williams Wilson from Arlington, Virginia, made a generous pledge.
Okay, so we have, how much do we have to go now, Frank?
We got 550.
550, folks. We brought in 4,000 30 years ago. We could still certainly come and get $700.
Absolutely.
You know, and
1-800-222-9739. Or you can pledge anytime, anywhere at WPFWFM.org, Cash App, $WPFWFM, or text 801-801.
Yes, and we know we can do it. We have about 500 to go? But I know people are going to, you know, they'll be texting later and whatnot, but this is certainly an important time to keep WPFW strong and on the air. This is, public media is being threatened, and I must say we're threatened as well. So this is a time to support your radio station, because nothing is guaranteed these days, and the only reason we exist is with your support.
Hey, Joni.
Yes.
This Calvin Wilkins. Hey, is $550 left, or is it $500 left?
Frank, what do you say?
I think $550.
Hey, I'm going to go to Cash App and do $550.
Bless your heart.
But no, I want you all to know I'm doing it in honor of the late Marion Barry, Minister Louis Farrakhan, and Reverend Willie Wilson, because honestly, if the three of those individuals were not involved 30 years ago, the level, I think we'd have had the participation, but the level and all the good and all the positives that came out, these were three men who represented men. They were respected as men, you know, notwithstanding their professional calling, ministers, politicians, they were respected among us as men. And as a result, we can follow men. And I'm making that $550 commitment through Cash App in honor of those three brothers and what they have done for the Black community.
Thank you very much, Calvin Hawkins. We appreciate that. And of course, we agree with you. I certainly agree, and Chuck agrees, that the role of Reverend Wilson and Marion Barry, just those two alone, is unforgettable. It's unforgettable. So we do appreciate you very much, and thank you. So we have 1 minute left. Reverend Wilson, you want to give your final statement?
Well, I just want everybody in the DMV to join us. Baltimore is coming over, Annapolis, PG County. We're coming together, and we need every voice. We need everybody. We need every person to join us at Union Temple on Saturday, starting at 9 a.m. And then, of course, on Thursday night at Union Temple at 7 o'clock, we're going to relive the spirit of the Million Man March. We got people to tell some stories of what happened and how, and things that you don't know. How did those black women, those great black women, how did they get on this program when at a time we were having negative statements in the major media? Some women who did articles that vehemently opposed the fact that it was for men only. And of course, how that came about that these great black women participated. That story is going to be told on Thursday night at Union Temple, and everybody needs to hear it. But everybody needs to gear up, get excited, and meet us on Saturday morning at 9 a.m. all day long. It's going to be great. Uh-huh. It's going to be fantastic with our culture, with go-go music, with Sugar Bear and EU and two other go-go groups and gospel music. Some of the greatest gospel singers in our region are going to be on that program, and all these leaders who come together in the name of unity. I want to thank Brother Calvin, who's certainly been integral part of making this happen, and we thank him for involving PG and himself in this effort. Thank you so much.
Okay, and Reverend Wilson, make sure you make that pledge, because they're telling me we still need $100, but I don't think we will, not with your pledge. So of course, Reverend Wilson was on the radio, so he couldn't physically make the pledge yet. We're going to go out with the song that we played 30 years ago that brought in $4,000. This song was people were relating to this song.
I can't stop now. Move up a little higher. Some way or somehow.
The Can I Kick It outdoor summer movie series presented by Shaolin Jazz is back, and it's coming to Southeast DC for the first time ever. Enjoy 3 nights of martial arts and action films, scored live with hip-hop, soul, and more, mixed by WPFW alum DJ Two Tone Jones. Then on Saturday, October 25th, the series concludes with the screening of I'm Gonna Get You Sucker at the Capitol Hill Boys Club Artist Gallery. Each event begins at 7 p.m. with a guest DJ set, followed by the movie at 8:30 p.m. Blankets and lawn chairs are welcome. For more details, visit shaolinjazz.com. shaolinjazz.com.
Are you ready? The Birchmere presents Keiko Matsui, November 2nd, and Macy Gray, November 5th. Details at birchmere.com.
Sego, this is John Kane, and I want to invite you to join me right here on WPFW on Fridays at 2 p.m. for Let's Talk Native. I will deliver guests and commentary each week on the real-life issues facing Native people. No romanticizing and no Hollywood stereotypes here. We'll talk real history and culture and life as it is and as it should be. Our shows are available as podcasts on your favorite podcast platforms and as videos on our Let's Talk Native TV YouTube channel. Find links and more at our website, www.letstalknative.com. And I'll see you here Fridays at 2 p.m. for Let's Talk Native with John Kane.
Good news, family. You can now take WPFW everywhere you go with our brand new WPFW radio app. Stream Jazz and Justice live, listen to archived shows, view the program schedule and playlists, donate, and more, all right from your phone. Download the WPFW radio app today from Apple App or Google Play Stores. WPFW in your pocket. Jazz and justice wherever you are.
No social justice issue or movement can escape the spotlight of the Latino Media Collective. The Latino Media Collective delivers consequential coverage from the biggest countries in South America to the smallest enclaves of Central America and the Caribbean, and is available on SoundCloud, iTunes Podcast, and Google Play Music. The Latino Media Collective is recorded in WPFW studios and airs Fridays at 1 p.m. on WPFW, Washington.
Hey, DC, we are reigniting the spirit of unity in our community beginning Monday, October 13th through Saturday, October 19th, by commemorating the 30th anniversary of the Million Man March and UniFest, two iconic events that shaped our history and continue to inspire our future. Events include prayer calls, a torch run, a lantern peace walk, a recommitment service, and a mini UniFest at Union Temple Baptist Church. This is an opportunity to honor the past and build bridges for a united future for our children and families. Revive